Hey, everybody. Scott here. Welcome to episode 179 of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast, coming off of an awesome week with Ajay Naidu from Office Space. So make sure to go back and check that. But this week, we have an awesome guest, and we also have some awesome sponsors. And I want to tell you about them before we get into our show today. One of our sponsors happens to be Demented Brewing, located in Middlesex, New Jersey. Now, Demented Brewing, it has one of the coolest tasting rooms. I love them because they're always putting out different styles of beer. Some breweries just put out nonstop IPAs and stouts. They put out something different all the time. They just released Requiem, their Wakadu dry hop lager, and Bottles of Nightmare, their Belgian dark strong aged in brandy barrels. This Sunday, they're going to be releasing Gluttony, their coffee stout. So go check out Demented Brewing. In Middlesex, got one of the best tap rooms to just go hang out and have a beer. That's Demented Brewing. Now, Manskirt Brewing also happens to be a sponsor on the podcast. They are located in Hackettstown, New Jersey. Manskirt Brewing, just one of the coolest places to hang out. Lots of room, play some games, listen to some music, go get some growler fills for Christmas Eve and the holidays. They have an old ale on tap called the Cougar, and Wee Heavy is coming out next, and then they're brewing a Belgian rye pale ale. So they always have seasonally inspired ales, rotating taps. Manskirt Brewing, go check out Joe Fisher in his Manskirt. Give them some love on Facebook and Instagram, and you will not be disappointed. Now, Susan Robb is a woman who helps us here on the podcast get some guests, and she also promotes a lot of really great inspirational speakers. She does some really great work. So her and Kim Ward, they work for the Templar Foundation, who was the hippo attack survivor that was on our show. They're working with a company, they have a cause called the Nepal Outreach Program. And their goal is to raise $25,000 to help put 17 ladies and moms and give them sewing supplies and get 15 kids into schools in Nepal. It's just a great cause. And so far, they were able to raise $5,000 in just a few weeks. They're also able to sell 10 of the quilts that they are trying to sell. So it's a great start, but they need more. And Susan and Kim Ward are working tirelessly to try to get this done, trying to get donations, corporate or individual donations. Every dollar helps for this really good cause. They're trying to get everyone into a sustainable program and these kids in school. So we support it. You guys should jump on if it sounds like you're interested. Check out the GoFundMe at the Paul Outreach Program or donate through Twitter at Kim Marie Ward or at M Susan Robb, ROBB3. Okay, so great cause at Susan and the Templar Foundation. Now, are you waking up with back pain? 50% of Americans are. Sleep Ovation's new mattress is 700 tiny mattresses that individually cradle each part of your spine, the curves of your spine. This provides perfect comfort and spine support for back pain relief, and honestly, the best damn sleep of your life. I switched over. It's the best mattress ever. It's like 700 individual clouds holding my spine perfectly. So you should check it out. Pre-order yours now at sleepovation.com. If you use the show code VERBAL, you get $100 off your order. So it's a win-win. Get a new mattress, help support the podcast. Boom! Finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. It's a trivia company, but we are also sponsored by lots of craft beer bars and breweries all in New Jersey. You can win prizes to these breweries just by going out to different beer bars and breweries to play trivia. You can be in last place, win a prize. So I host on Wednesday nights at Tap House 15, same place we do the Verbal Shenanigans comedy shows. So check out Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Now, today on the show, we have a really awesome artist by the name of Stolar. Now, that's not a Greek god. That's his performance name and also part of his last name, which we found out. But it's really interesting. He suffers from bipolar disorder, writes thousands and thousands of songs, does make some really cool music, and just a really genuine dude. So I think you're going to like it. So with that, enjoy the podcast.
Hey, this is Stolar, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
yeah. Mike Berlow.
Scott Brennan.
Welcome back to... Not really welcoming you back, Mike, but I'm welcoming the thousands and thousands of...
The millions!
And millions! of listeners back to the show. Almost at 180 episodes, 179.
Oh, my.
Creeping towards 200.
We're getting there.
Wait till you see what we have planned for episode 200.
Scott, we're supposed to have a meeting. we really don't have anything.
Yes, so we have the return of the sleep deprivation guy.
Yes!
Also... Daniel Piscina will be joining us to talk about his role as...
We're going to release some unreleased content from V-Verts. It'll be amazing.
I wonder if I still have that interview anywhere. I don't know. This recorder has so many files on it. Well, that reminds me. We got to get the weird files that I found on there. The people that had this before me. Remember the last week? Like, what the hell is that? It's like some Asian guy yelling like, this is worth money. That's not a terrible Asian accent.
That was super... That's up there with Berlew accents.
I'm not good at accents. Really.
No.
I can do them for like a half a second, and then they just like all kind
they
of
go.
Turn.
Yeah.
Well, we've heard your. Yeah, everything turns to Russian somehow.
Eventually, yeah. You know, I mean, they're eventually going to take over the world, so as long as I get the first beat in and then go to the proper motherland.
Well, let's try it. Say, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans in your Russian accent.
I haven't even done them.
Well, just whatever comes to you. It's like improv. Go.
Welcome to Verbal Shenanigans.
See, that's not bad. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. I think Russian is your sweet spot.
Yeah.
Now, let's experiment here. Say, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans in your Latino accent. Maybe Mexican.
Hey.
Come on. Give it some effort. Ready?
I'm terrible at it.
Let's say we're playing an improv game, and they're like, go.
Hi, Chico. Welcome to Verbal Shenanigans.
You started getting a little Irish at the end there. How about do it in your Jamaican accent? And go.
Yeah, man. Verbal Shenanigans. I bobsled, y'all.
It's funny because I hear just a little Russian in everything. Your Caribbean Russian that you got going on there. Irish, go.
I can't even do an Irish accent.
Come on, last one.
You're
go.
Not doing any.
The game was to hear your
French.
Oh, oui, oui. Welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. That's the best I could do. That was actually, if I had to try that again, it would not come out that.
No.
That was the best. That was the highest that I could. That's the ceiling that I could hit. But, anyway. Mm. Irish, go.
Conor McGregor. Welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. I can't.
The Irish one really gets you panicked. You have no problem offending the Russians, the Mexicans, the Jamaicans, but you don't want the Irish after you. I get
it. They got some strong people back.
The damn show is named Verbal Shenanigans. At least you can. It has some Irish ties to it. Not really. We use a shamrock, though.
It's just green. That doesn't really count as Irish.
We have a shamrock, a clover.
Yeah,
that's the logo.
It's a three-leaf clover, though. Not so lucky.
Our intro is very, very Irish, very Gaelic feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple of times I thought about changing the song, and then I like get go to listen to it, and I'm like, I can't change it. It's just, it's the part of the show. I had one other intro when we first started, but it probably only lasts like 25 episodes, and it's been this since.
I remember one time at work, we had this. The secretary, she was really cool and whatever, and she was talking to the HR lady, and she says she's part Gaelic, and then, like, the HR lady's like, I just have to warn you, you can't be using kind of words like that. That's very offensive. And she's like, that's Irish.
Bizarre.
People are offended. They're not really sure why, but...
So, let's see, another thrilling week in the news. We had a bomber that didn't really that pretty much blew himself up.
Yeah.
Failed attempt.
I mean, what happens there? Does he get less virgins when he eventually dies and goes up to Allah? They're like, all right.
He gets all fat ones.
That's a 15 virgin penalty right there, my friend. I'm sorry.
He get instead of 72, he gets...
like 41.
See, I was going to say he gets 41 heavy ones. I would really like to do this show and not be like, oh, another bombing. Every week it seems there's some kind of bombing,
stop doing
shooting.
Stand-up.
That's true. But bombing, shooting, something. Some terrible story.
But there's always going to be shooting. There's no way stopping that, at least in America. I mean, it's just more popular shootings, quote unquote. Like but, the everyday shootings is like, yeah, whatever. Hi, Ole.
There he is. Well, it wouldn't be an episode until
nope.
Big Mouth says hello.
Hey, Obi, what episode is it? 172? 173? 174? Keep going, buddy.
I bet if we had no time, I mean, no, nothing but time, I mean, if we went through every episode and just isolated his barks, that you would probably have like an episode worth of just him barking.
I'm guessing the last time we didn't have him bark in an episode is possibly when we were in your old house.
Possibly.
Because he was even barking when we did it from your parents' house.
Yep, and yep.
I guess you omit any remote ones that we did. Obviously, he couldn't find a way to sneak in.
Phone rings.
Who gave the dog the iPhone?
But I guess we'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about the story of Keaton. You follow this whole thing?
No, I haven't. What's
really?
Up?
The whole Keaton Jones, his kid who got bullied?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know that one. I didn't know the kid's
name. This is
name.
quite an interesting story, if you ask me. So there's this kid out of Tennessee middle schooler. I'm sure those of you listening have heard this, too.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee middle schooler, he's speaking out on this emotional Facebook video. His mom is recording of the kid he's basically crying about being bullied. The kid's he looks a little off. Like you can see him being like the type of kid that might have been made fun of and whatnot. And like immediately you start to feel bad. Now, I had an interesting reaction. Well, why don't we listen to it?
Yeah.
And we can kind of analyze.
I don't even think I heard the whole thing, to be honest.
No.
I've heard his story, but I didn't hear his video.
Okay, so.
Out of curiosity, why do they
bully? So here's the kid.
What's the point of it? Why do you enjoy taking innocent people and finding a way to be mean to them? It's not okay.
What do they say to you?
They make fun of my nose. They call me ugly. They say I have no friends.
What'd they do to you at lunch?
Put milk on me and put ham down my clothes. They threw at me.
Is it just you?
Yep.
Or is it other kids, too, that feel that way?
Say it's other kids, too.
How's that make you feel?
I don't like that they do it to me, and I for sure don't like that they do it to other people, because it's not okay. People that are different don't need to be criticized about it, because it's not their fault. But if you are made fun of, just don't let it bother you. Just stay strong, I guess. It's hard. But it'll probably get better one day.
Okay. So, first off, when I start crying, I'd probably, my first thing out of my mouth would be, Mom, stop recording me.
Okay, exactly. My first reaction to this. Yeah, I see a bunch of people post it. A couple comics I even knew posted it. And it was like on the news feed all day on Facebook. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, a lot of celebrities are backing him and saying, hey,
like
come
Dana
to this
White
game.
And all these UFC guys.
Yeah.
And okay, so my first reaction, I kind of look at everything with like a skeptical eye these days. I don't know. I guess it's just the whole like fake news thing. But I look at everything kind of like, I don't know. So right away, I'm thinking the same thing. I'm like, why is it, if this is your mom, okay, and you're all said, why, obviously the mom is filming this for a reason. Like, there's some kind of selfish reason, or she's trying to make this video go viral, which I think is, kind of strange. Like if you're filming your son's reaction to being bullied, to like try to make a viral video. How about you deal with the problem with your son?
Yeah.
You know, like
the last thing in my mind is my kid is hurt. Let's see if we can get a couple hits on YouTube.
Yeah, like this isn't Chewbacca mom or whatever. You know, like this is like.
Now that'd be a great thing, Chewbacca mom trying to calm down the bully kid,
or Chewbacca mom bullying the kid. Now, so people posted. This is Keaton Jones, celebrities. He had a third party GoFundMe page, which I don't really know what the GoFundMe really is. Also, like I don't believe throwing money at someone who's bullied or whatever is really a solution. And what are we raising money for?
That, I've always wondered that. Like, there's Be a Star, and there's few other programs where like we're raising money to try to stop bullying. It's like, well, how are you paying off the bullies not to, you know, beat up the kids? I just don't get how on earth more money is going to stop this problem. Kids are assholes. I said it when I was a kid. I said it when I was a teenager looking at little kids. I'm an adult. I'm seeing it again. It's always going to happen. I applaud people trying to stop it as much as possible, but you're not going to stop bullying.
Yeah, now, I'm not making light of bullying. I'm saying, like, how is throwing money, say Mike Berlow got bullied. And,
he did.
Okay, I'll talk about that in a second, too. So you got bullied. How would someone throwing you $56,000 towards your family help this situation? Just that you got a lot of money now?
I mean, I guess if it goes to the family, the only thing I could fathom is private school, but there's no guarantee the private school doesn't have bullies. They probably do, because they'll be rich snobs.
So he had reactions from Bieber and Gail Goddard and LeBron James and Evan Mark Ruffalo. So they had everybody. This woman's video worked, okay? So I guess before we go forward, so your experience with bullying, when was this all in school? Was this
I would probably say the most of it occurred like when I came over from Pennsylvania to Jersey, probably.
And what kind of things?
Usual, the name calling. I would have to get into fights and stuff like that to defend myself, items like that. I mean, nothing earth-shattering where I go, just my childhood was horrible, blah, blah, blah.
Besides when they told you Dukes of Hazzard sucks. You blasted people. That kid will never talk again.
I did have the Dukes of Hazzard board game I did bring into school once, but I don't think they mocked me for that.
That kid's drinking through a straw still. But, okay. So that they're name-calling, anything else? Anything ever get physical or...
I got into fights. I mean, usual stuff. Sometimes, I mean, I was a bigger kid, so I could slap some around. Some of them, the bullies were strong, and I got a couple punches to my stuff, but, I mean, nothing really...
Punches to your stuff?
Yeah. I mean, all...
Just beat your stuff down. So you got into, like... Did you ever get into, like, an all-out fight, like, where there was, like, serious, like, you know, like... Black eyes and blood everywhere.
I never got that.
I feel like little kid fights or young kid always seem to end in just like tackling and like.
There were fists thrown, for what I recall, when I had fights as a kid. But I mean, nobody went to the hospital. Nobody lost a tooth. Nobody broke a bone. I mean, it's
how are your parents with like the fighting? Like, have you got a new fight? Like, supportive of you, or like, did you get a little bit of both in trouble and supportive?
I mean, my dad was all for you have to defend yourself. I mean, his whole thing was if they call me and they say you're in a fight, you know, I'll support you. If they call me and they said you started a fight, I'm gonna punish you,
right?
That was my dad's basic background. He's like, you gotta defend yourself, but I don't want to ever hear about it. There was actually one time I can remember, I was even a little older, I think it was in like junior high, I was getting bullied, and I was at a football game there, and I went away, and one of the kids grabbed my bags, and he chucked it over the fence where, I mean, it was like two fences away where there was no, like, easy entrance. Like, you have to climb up yourself and then climb back to get back to the area. And my dad actually came down, he was going to come and watch the game with me.
Right.
And I was kind of in face-to-face with this kid. My dad came up to the kid, and he pulled the kid aside. He says, he's like, what do you want? What do you want? You can't touch me. He's like, oh, no, I don't want you to touch you. I want you to beat up my son. And the kid, what? He's like, you're so tough. I, you know, you're just saying words right now. Go over there and beat up Michael. I mean, the kid was like, I probably had like 60 pounds on him or something. But you never know. Some kids have a good fight or whatever. But he just got encouraging. He's like, if you're going to try this stuff, go ahead and have a fight. But if you're going to be a lot of work, I'm just not. He's basically saying, if you're going to keep this up, you know, I'm going to bring you into somebody. But if you want to end this, go fight him. And then the kid just kind of walked away knowing there was a chance he was going to get his ass kicked and whatever, so.
Fat dog. He's clawing at his food bowl.
Daddy, Burlew's in the house.
Yeah. All right, so let's continue this story. So, yeah, the only time I really remember, like, dealing with, like jerks. Like, of course there were jerks, but I remember one kid, like, I had this brand new, like, green Adidas sweatshirt for my birthday, and I really loved it. And he was sitting behind, it had a hood, and he was sitting behind me, and he was like this big. He was one of those kids in middle school who had, like, a beard and was, like, insanely big and was, like sleeping with girls and stuff. And I was like, oh, I like my toys, like, still. I play soccer. Hold on. What do you want?
Daddy, it's Burlew time. You know what that means. I get more food. If you don't give me food, I'm going to bark all through your guests tonight, Daddy.
I'm doing it anyway.
Huh? I'm going to bully you, Daddy. Give me my food.
I'm doing it anyway.
Give me my food.
So, yeah, and I remember he, like, I get this new sweatshirt I wore the first day, and he was, like, sitting behind me in class, just, like, pulling the hood. And he, like, ripped the hood, and the whole sweatshirt, like, ripped, and I was, like, devastated in, like, sixth grade. And I remember, like, that was, we kind of got into it, but that was kind of the all I remember, like, as far as ever feeling, like, bullied. But I remember a lot of kids who were awfully bullied. And I don't think I was ever too bad to anybody.
I wasn't bad with bullying. I mean, I had depression as a kid. I remember one time, like, in the second grade, crying, I got no friends, nobody likes me kind of stuff. But nothing where it was, like, specifically somebody pointing out something and, like, a whole group mocking me or anything like that.
All right. So, okay. So, they raised the money to this GoFundMe thing. Okay. Now, after a little while, which was a feel-good story, a reported screenshot of Keaton's mother's Facebook began circulating, apparently showing family members posting Confederate flags and seeming to denigrate those who opposed it. So, she wrote, "Dear butthurt Americans, if you aren't bleeding, no bones sticking out of you, and you can't breathe, stop crying. For the love of some folks, clearly never picked a switch. And before we all start talking to me about metaphorical, emotional, financial, historical blood and brokenness, don't join a group. You'll need some porch therapy, coffee with Jesus." And it's a picture of, like, I stand for the flag and them holding a bunch of Confederate flags.
I don't recall in the Bible Jesus having a Confederate flag.
No, I don't. Well,
I'm going to reread it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's in the Quran.
So this one, like, fighter kind of, like, figured out that this woman might be, like, a weird, like, white supremacist, and that this kind of whole thing might have been set up. And then there were some rumors that this kid had gotten beat up because he was using the N-word in school and stuff like that. So, I don't know. I think this all stems from the mother. Like, what? Like, and I guess now there's some backlash, which we'll follow up next week and see what she says. But I guess now she's saying,
we got her on the show?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Awesome.
So, Kimberly Jones, I guess there was a fake Instagram account. Now she's saying, we haven't received money and don't plan on it. The GoFundMes aren't by any of us. Those who know me and my family know we aren't racist. My brother doesn't say the N-word. Please leave it alone. We aren't. My brother doesn't say it, but I do.
That's a random throw-in. Yeah. I just want to say that.
Yep. We aren't verified, seeing as we are normal people. The verified account doesn't even have my name spelled correctly. I am from the South. Y'all see a million flags like that. Doesn't mean we're racist. Blah, 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 blah. This is, I don't know. It's a weird story, man. It's just a weird,
Well, for starters, you got to take the two things separately. The kid's getting bullied and you feel bad for him.
Yeah.
You know, do stuff for the kid. And I'll take out whatever you think of the mother and leave that by your side. You know, I mean, if you can find a way to help the kid and make sure you, the mom gets nothing, you know, more power to you. But you got to keep the two things separate. And nowadays, you never know. You don't know. Hey, your mom's FaceTiming you.
No,
you
mom.
You got your mom on the guest?
No, mom, I'm podcasting. She's like, my son doesn't say the N-word.
we weren't insinuating that, hon.
So I don't know what's going to happen with this Keaton story, but it seems to be the big story of this week. And it's just another example. I mean, bullying, Confederate flag, people being offended. This one's got all the hot points in it in one story.
Yeah, I guess in the end you gotta kind of look at it. I mean, I feel bad for the kid, but at the same time I kind of ask, okay, how's it different from any other kid in this world? And to be frank, if he's just saying they're saying names and dumping milk, I mean, I don't feel bad for the kid. I feel horrible he has to go through it. But their kids are going to school and getting the shit kicked out of them for whatever religious reasons, color reasons, and items like that. And there's so many more that are more harsh. I'm not going to knock down this one, but just sounds like a generic case of, yeah, kids are assholes.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I think it's going to be another. We're going to find the truth out in the next few days here. If you keep up on the story, you're going to find out what happened. But I think it comes down to the mom. I'm like, be a mother. Don't be a social media warrior, trying to get attention.
Well, that's what everybody does. If you see a fight, do you sit back and say, oh my God, let me get the authorities or police? Or are you pulling out your phone?
World star!
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's time to shift and get to our guest.
All right.
Well, it'd be great if Obi could just, like, not eat as loud as humanly possible every time.
Oh, this is good chow.
Okay, oh, yeah.
I taste chicken. I taste grains.
I always say, like, why? It's always when we're about to do something with a guest. It's never, like, when we're talking about, like, a trade the Mets made or didn't make or what you did.
They got Stanton?
Over the weekend.
I heard New York got Stanton.
Yeah. Yeah. Ridiculous. But anyway, let's get to our guest. Coming up on the show, another artist from Ray B. Inc., R-E-Y-B-E-E, by the name of Stolar. Now, he's a kind of more of a pop, kind of R&B type artist, but he has a pretty interesting backstory. He suffers from being bipolar.
Okay.
And he claims, or has said to have been, wrote over 1,000 songs to kind of get him through, I guess, what he suffers from. So it should be interesting. So we're going to give him a call right now.
That's a very long album.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of gigabytes to download it from iTunes. But let's check it out.
Hello?
Hey, is this Stolar?
This is.
How's it going, man? This is Scott and Mike here from Verbal Shenanigans. How's it going?
Going good. How you guys doing?
We're doing good, man. Thanks for pushing it back a half hour here, but
all good. It actually worked out really well.
Now the name Stolar, where does that come from?
It's actually my last name. So my great grandfather came to America from like the Ukraine, Russia. It was on the border of those two countries in the early 1900s. And it was Stolarski. And he cut off the ski and made it Stolar.
Yeah, it's got like a very, by itself, it's got a very like Greek god sounding kind of name.
I was saying Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right.
I heard Stolar.
Oh, man. I love you and you just made my day.
So where are we calling you from?
I'm actually at the studio in the Warner Chapel, Warner Brothers Atlantic building in Times Square.
Oh, okay. So you're right in New York right now.
Yeah, I'm in New York.
Now you live in New York, correct?
I do. I'm in New York through and through. I live in Williamsburg.
All right. Now, tell us how you, like, you, I got to listen to some of your songs over the week, kind of preparing for interview and none. You have a very, kind of, it's hard to describe your sound. It's got kind of a pop, but a little bit of R&B, a little bit of synthesizers kind of going on. Were you always a musician or a singer, or did this kind of find you later in life?
Always for me. I took piano lessons when I was really young, but I hated it. Like, classic, your mom's making you practice, reading a book, playing like chopsticks, bullshit piano lessons.
Hot cross buns.
Exactly. And then I would like sneak into the piano by myself and mess around and write stuff. I wrote my first song in third grade. I can't find it. I'm still trying.
Next album. Next album.
I hate cooties.
And I'm sure, knowing me, it was still some like sort of emotional ballad about some girl that I had a crush on. And then in fifth grade, I started singing, and the main outlet that I had was theater, because at my school there wasn't a band program or anything like that. So my brother and I both played guitar, and I just kind of, he took lessons, so I kind of learned stuff from him. And then I did tons of plays and things like that, while simultaneously all my friends were in like the pop punk screamo scene in New Jersey. And I'd be like going to their shows and writing songs on my own. And at that age, man, I was writing weird, weird hybrids of like stuff that was a little theatrical, but was like kind of like emo, pop, punk, Radiohead stuff. Right, I was writing really, really fucking weird music. But it's all I've ever wanted and all I've ever done, which is, a blessing and a curse in a lot of ways.
Now, when you write so many different songs in so many ways, how do you go about it? Do you go into it just saying, I'm in the mood for a little more punk today, a little more synthesized? Is there a schedule where you go, I want to write a certain amount of this or that? How you go about doing that?
So for me, I feel like there are two distinct answers to that question. One is, if it's just me in a room by myself, everything is 100% emotionally and instinctually driven. And my practice is pretty consistent now, where like 5 days a week, I wake up and I have a practice that I call the dig. And I meditate and then turn on a recorder. And for 10 minutes, I sing and improvise words and melodies at the same time, and following every idea moment to moment. And as soon as I start landing on something, like if I land on a chorus or a verse, I switch ideas immediately. So either switch rhythm, switch lyric concepts, switch chords, switch tempos. And I do that to just bring up all of the things that I don't want to talk about, or all of the things that maybe I'm not quite aware that are most resonant for me. But then all of a sudden I'll be surprised by it, because I'm working so fast that I can't really think. So I know it's a little bit of a weird process. But for me, it's been great, because it's like, if it's a day where I'm having issues with my family, or if it's a day where some horrible shit's gone on in the world, or if it's a day where I just went out with a really badass girl the night before, or if it's the last 8 months where I've been going through insane heartbreak and every day is a song about that.
a lot of heartbreak going on here. Wow, lots of heartbreak.
Starting at the third grade. My God.
No, third grade wasn't heartbreak. Those were just crushes. So that's like, if it's by myself, and then if I'm with other people, I try to, well, usually I'm being thrown into a different musical situation then. So if it's another artist that I'm working with, or a producer or a band or whoever it is, and we're collaborating that day and it's for me, I'm just going to kind of lean into what everybody else is feeling sonically and musically. And then usually emotionally, I just like rip open my chest. I'm like, hey, this is me. this is everything that you would only know if you were my best friend or, you know, girlfriend or parent, but we're writing songs, so I'm going to tell you everything. Right. And then we usually hit something that connects and go from there. So, like, leading with emotion,
right,
is kind of how I work.
Now, when Ray had contacted me about, you know, hooking up with you, one of the interesting things that surely stuck out, he said, you were very, like, structured in your songwriting regimen, and you write, like, up to 3 songs a day, and it helps you actually deal with bipolar disorder. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I've been a strong advocate for mental health, mainly based on just my own experiences.
Right.
And I feel like deal with is probably like a tricky term.
Mm-hmm.
I would describe it more as it helps me have a flow and channel whatever sort of large emotional swings I'm going through. Now, like,
okay,
the way I like to describe it is like the average person, say, like, all your whole life, let's use the metaphor, was just you on a boat on the water. And the average person in the morning has, you know, like, the tide gets a little rough and then it's super chill during the day. And then maybe in the afternoon, it gets a little more rough. Every now and then there's a storm.
Mm-hmm.
For someone like me or people that deal with any sort of mental health challenge, it'll be like the morning and all of a sudden there's a 100-foot rogue wave. And then it's 2 o'clock and it's super chill. And then it's 3 o'clock and there's a storm and it's 4 o'clock and it's like a drought.
Right.
And you're constantly dealing with all of these different shifts and movements and kind of have to learn how to navigate those waters, you know, and you get better at it. So for me, there's a host of things that really allow me to become comfortable in whatever sort of emotional rogue wave comes my way. And the key elements are a morning meditation and then this dig practice and songwriting.
Right.
It's just like I'm constantly getting shit out. So even if it's a really, really hard time or I'm facing something challenging, at least I'm processing it for myself and I can get faster. I can get to an understanding of what's happening quicker than if I were to just like sit in it and let it fester and fester and fester. So yeah, it's actually creatively
right.
and as an artist become just a huge gift and a key element of how I work.
Now, is this something you've been dealing with your entire life, or did this come on at a certain age?
It hit particularly hard when, like, sophomore year of college. But I was always pretty emotional, I would say. I don't think I quite understood it for a while, but, like, very emotional and always liked having deep conversations and really connecting with people. But when I was younger, it would be a little bit more explosive and not really understanding, like, why am I so angry right now? Or, you know, why am I crying? Why am I this? Why am I that? But it wasn't until college that it started to get like, oh, something is wrong. I should figure this out.
Now, I mean, this is kind of all fascinating. Does being a part of music business where there's you have different band members and setups and times and stuff like that, do you find yourself it hitting you harder as if like there's a delay and getting a recording session ready or something like that? Or is it just at ease since you're kind of in your field with your love of music?
Yeah, I feel like I'm really lucky and I've been able to build a pretty strong like pie chart of things that keep my brain in motion and helping everything be balanced. So even if, yeah, my life is crazy, man. Like I've been to LA 7 times in September. In the next 4 weeks, I'm going to California,
awesome.
Columbia, Houston, Seattle, back to Los Angeles, and then to New York. So it's like I'm constantly moving. And I think it's my daily practice, my community, my friends, and my music. And now, like, a connection with fans through the Raw Emotions Project that enables me to have that ground in really one of the craziest lives of anyone that I'm friends with. Like, this music is, the music world is pretty nuts.
Now, did you, when did you first start getting noticed by anybody? Was it through your voice, your own songwriting? Was it through performing with other musicians? Where did you start to get a little bit of notice?
I'd say like the first big break, or whatever you want to call it, is that I basically paid a bunch of my friends. I was like, take off from work, come with me to South by Southwest. I'm going to try to book like some random shows. And we had a show on a rooftop at 12 p.m. There were four people there.
sounds like most of my comedy
sets.
Yeah.
And one of those people was my now manager, Michael Morrison. And I didn't really have much going on. I just had me and my songs at the time, and he was just a big believer from the beginning.
What was your setup live? Was it just you and because I know a lot of your music is digital, but is it through keyboard?
Yeah.
So are you playing through a laptop? Are you playing through keyboards? What are you doing at that time period?
At that time period, well, my music's evolved a lot, but at that point, it was a total live band. So it was I was playing electric guitar, another electric guitar player, keyboard player, and synthesizer. Bass player and a drummer.
Okay, so full.
Now it's a much different situation live.
So you go back to, so you got noticed by your manager. So what happens after that? Does he say, "Hey, I want you to write some songs for me"? Does he put together a demo for you? What is the next step? Everybody seems to have a completely different journey through this.
Totally, man. It was he and I barreling our way through trying many different things to figure out who I am. If I'm going to be like totally transparent with it, and it took a lot of different iterations. Like, I'm, to my own fault, a perfectionist, and in the last 4 or 5 years I've recorded and thrown out 4 albums. And we kept trying to like just figure out who I am. And I think what I realized this year, which was the work that I've been doing and we've been doing over the last 4 or 5 years, is that I don't define myself by a particular sound, right? By like R&B, pop, rock, something like that, which is a dangerous thing to say in the music business. There definitely is a cohesion to my music and the way I sing and the chords I choose, but really my sound is the core elements of my songs. And the words, the way that the lyrics are, I always want them to be like super transparent and real and gripping and something that can be a soundtrack for someone's life, you know? So just trying to pull, I figure if I pull the truth out of myself, it'll be something that will resonate with other people. So I guess I would, now that I think about it, like the big break was us realizing that and having the awareness to be like, okay, I am just going to write the songs that feel the best, that are the most real. I'm going to make them with people I love and start putting them out, and put them out consistently. And as soon as I started doing that, which honestly has really only been in the last year, everything's been growing exponentially. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Yeah. Good. Talk a little about your early times. Like, for what I'm looking up, you toured with the indie band Julius C. Just kind of give us a thought process of how it felt in the earlier days and how it kind of moved you towards more your sound of today.
So Julius C. was a sex-infused funk Led Zeppelin pop rock band.
All right.
Dude, it was a wild thing.
sounds so tame.
It's sex infused. Wow.
Dude, it was like all the lyrics were just about sex. It was like if you took Prince and Zeppelin and P-Funk and a couple of white guys who were trying to figure out how to sound as funky as possible. That's what you had. And all the other guys were jazz musicians, or they went to school for jazz. And we're all in college, right out of college. And that's where I learned how to be a musician, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they were super, super hard on me. Like they were assholes for sure. I'd be like, oh, you don't know what a minor fourth chord is? Oh, wow. Yeah, whatever. Okay, well, here's where it is. Like, you're singing out of time. Come on, man. Like, you need to do that again. You need to sing in time. Have you go, like, listen to these Sly and the Family Stone records. Go listen to Paul McCartney. They always sing in time. Like, just, it was kind of like boot camp for being a musician. And now I'm grateful for it. At the time, it was pretty horrible and just really intense. But it also pushed, I was really the only songwriter. So these were guys who could create music really quickly.
Right.
And I'd be bringing, you know, 5-10 plus songs to the table every week or two. And then we had a house that we lived in Staten Island. We had a house we lived in Newark, New Jersey, actually.
Nice.
And we just work. And we also toured a lot too. So like I probably played, I don't know, in the course of 4 years or so, about 1,000 shows with Julius C. We played a lot of shows.
Nice.
So it kind of helped me learn what it means to have a craft, even though the music itself and the sound didn't feel like it was completely who I was. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not a sex-infused Led Zeppelin pop rocker.
Darn.
But it was fun though too. I loved working. Like by the time we'd all been working together for so long, we were just like a machine, you know. Mm-hmm. And man, finding a band that works is really hard. I admire anybody who has that, you know.
Well, I always talk on this podcast how much I miss having bands, but like as you get older, it's even harder and harder and harder to find three, four, or five guys that can have the same schedule, and you know, like you got to find the right group. But I wanted to ask you, so you have these, you talked about your songwriting process a little bit, and I think what you called your dig period, whatnot. But now when you go and you make music with different producers and more digital kind of things, is it hard for you to collab with people, like go from your style of writing to all of a sudden working with different producers and making even more pop-like songs where there's sometimes more of a cage you got to kind of sit in? Do you find it hard to kind of collab with people, or did you find that pretty natural?
I find it freeing, to be honest, because it's Sean Penn has a quote. It's one of my favorite quotes. That's, you have to build yourself a cage to run wild. Mm-hmm. And then McCartney talks about songwriting in a way that really resonates with me, where he was saying, like, you play a chord and then all of a sudden you start hearing stuff. Like, you start hearing the melodies. He probably didn't say it like that. You play a chord and then you start hearing stuff. But for me, it's almost like a Pavlov dog. Like, I hear music and then I start writing. That's just like the way my brain works now. So when I walk into a room with a producer, and those sessions could really range, say like someone already has a track, which is not all the time, but now I'm hearing something and boom, I can just go with it. And because so much of my time in the past, and I'd say like every other month, is spent at home in my studio writing by myself, I'm very used to just moving and going with whatever's happening. So if it's somebody who's inspiring to work with, and whether they have something that's pre-recorded or they come in and I play the keyboards and the bass and then they start producing around it and they're producing while I'm writing, it really gives me the space to do whatever is coming. And it, as I was saying before, because I feel like my sound is the songs, it kind of doesn't matter if it's like an Americana record or like a digital pop thing. I definitely love pop music.
Right.
And I love pop music that has teeth and has depth to the lyrics. I think that there's not enough of that right now in the world. We have like a lot of very dumb, stupid pop.
No.
And I like being able to make something that, like, you know, people will be dancing to at a party or like really raging. And then the next day they have, they're by themselves and they're like feeling lonely and they go and listen to the same song. Like, whoa, oh wow, this song's saying something. You know, it's almost like a emotional Trojan horse. So I love it, man. And one of the things I want to do in the next 4 or 5 months, because I've written a bunch of songs that fit a little bit more into like Americana rock, is collaborate with a band in the realm of like Illumineers or Chris Stapleton, like someone like that, and do a project together so I could get these songs into the world, you know. But for now, I'm on a pop song, pop R&B song kick for sure.
Now, it's kind of interesting you just literally just said how some pop is stupid. I find like in a lot of interviews, a lot of artists are kind of scared to say anything. They're like, the only one that comes to mind that kind of speaks out is like Pink on some of the pop stuff. Why do you think people are so scared to just say, okay, that's kind of contrived and kind of not real music, and not, I guess for lack of a better term, just sitting out and saying, hey, we got to make some real music out here?
Why do I think people say that? Well, because like I don't know, it's an example of a quote unquote stupid song, but some of those songs are really hard to write too. Right. Like, we might judge a song that's like a huge, fun, shallow pop song, and I know lots of people who are like, oh, that's so stupid, like it's so easy. And I'm like, yeah, it's easy. Go get in a room and try to write like a really palatable global smash, you know. So even though I said what I said, I do think there's a time and a place for songs that aren't necessarily heavy and then can just be fun, you know. There are some that are just idiotic and none of us should ever have to be forced to listen to, but I don't think that that's the majority. So I would say some people are probably just afraid to piss other people off. And some, I think, recognize the intense amount of work, whoever you are, even if the song is shallow, lyrically, just how much time went into that, from the writers to the producers to then the label and then the radio people and the band who's touring with it and the interviews and the heart and showing your mother and showing your brother and showing your girlfriend. And you know what I mean? Like, someone took a lot of time on that. So as dumb as it might be, it's someone worked hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Now you mentioned, you touched on it before with some of your work, and your advocacy for mental health and whatnot. And I know on your bio, it says you work with the Be Vocal campaign, and you mentioned another campaign, I think you said Express Yourself or Voice, but tell us about some of the, like, does the work you do, do you find yourself helping other people who suffer from mental health? Has being online and like living in a social media, you know, world been easy for you to kind of connect with people? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, at a core level, as scary as it is sometimes, like even with you, I don't know, you guys, you seem really, really nice, and I hope we get to like have a drink and chill one day.
No, it's all an act. It's all an act.
But to within 5 minutes be like, yeah, you know, I have been diagnosed with bipolar disorder. I have my own mental health challenges, blah, 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 blah. It's scary every time. But at the core base level, my hope is that by being open about it and talking about it, that someone who maybe listens to this podcast and is depressed and keeping it all in and having a really hard time, maybe is a little more inspired to speak up, or maybe they'll send me a message online, or they'll talk to their parents, or they'll talk to their best friend. So I think what I've learned is it does help me too. It's helpful to just like be open about it and not feel like I'm hiding. But I hope that it can inspire other people just to talk, just to speak up. Like, that's all we really, that at the base level, one of the most important things around mental health is just talking about it. So I try to live by that mantra. And then I've been really lucky to meet some amazing people at the Jed Foundation. We talked about Be Vocal, which we did a really cool project with them, and just get to tell my story, talk to people openly, play music at events where usually it's pretty dry and people are just telling stories or talking about mental illness, and I get to come up and play a song and just bring a little bit more energy and light to it and help people connect to something that's really hard to be open about. Our society is not quite ready to look at mental illness in the way that we look at cardiovascular disease or diabetes. You know, like right. At the end of the day, it's an illness, and the sooner that we can just see it like that, the faster that people will start opening up and talking about things at an earlier age, and we'll have less highly traumatic events in our country, not just suicides, but mass shootings. You know, like these are people who are mentally ill, a lot of them. So not to get super heavy, but yeah, that's how I think about it.
Now, with all your different styles and all that you've worked through, has there been a single person or different people that you can think of where you sat back and said, oh, wow, this is so cool to collaborate with them, or somebody that may have opened your mind to a different style of singing or writing or anything of that kind?
Yeah, there's a bunch. Let's say, like, who's been the most influential kind of thing
sure.
in my life.
Whatever comes to your mind.
Yeah. Honestly, the guy who comes to my mind is not necessarily music, but I went to NYU and I studied at the Tisch School of the Arts. Mm-hmm. And the head of the Tisch School of the Arts was this guy named Kevin Kolke, who is like 6'3" or 6'4", is like gray hair, always wearing movement clothes. He kind of reminds me of Gandalf. Like, he's just a very, very special human being. And I was really lucky to have Kevin kind of take me under his wing throughout college and hook me up with different really brilliant New York City artists, from himself, this woman Liz Suedos. I worked with a bunch of different hip-hop artists and rappers that he connected me to, and like people who are in the world with Lin-Manuel, ranging from the musical theater stuff to just more straight up underground New York hip hop and rap music. And he just kind of taught me what it was like to be an artist, to live life through the lens of, okay, this is what I do. I make things. I do my best to make the things that express who I am and then put them out into the world for other people. So it's not necessarily a musical connection, but I would definitely describe him as like the most impactful artist on my life. And in fact, he and I have been working for the last few years out of school to develop what is now my dig process. So it's he's brilliant, man. If you ever run into a guy in the street in New York who looks like Gandalf, say hi.
He'll Unfortunately, there's like a lot of lot of Gandalf-looking guys out
That's
there.
That's not abnormal for New York, I gotta be honest.
Especially in Williamsburg. There's Gandalfs everywhere.
Hey, it's Gandalf in the red suit. Oh, it's Santa. Yeah. Again, dang.
But, Stoller, before you, before we get out of here, what kinds of things are you working on, and what kinds of things can we look forward to hearing from you? What's upcoming?
Well, I just released a project called Raw Emotions, and essentially Raw Emotions is a year-long project where I'm releasing new music every month, and it's not incredibly regimented. Like, the last 3 months, we did 2 songs in September, 2 songs in October, and just released a whole EP this month. And basically each month is focused on a different emotion. And the songs are connected to that emotion.
Cool.
The photos that we take in the month, different collaborations with artists, videos, everything is connected to the emotion and exploring that emotion. The idea of it is, considering the way I like to write, just putting music out as it comes and sharing my next year of my life with people and carving that into music and putting it out into the world. So,
awesome.
Yeah, you can follow along with that. It's literally every month for a year. So we're in the third month.
Where can people check that out?
So Stolar Music on Instagram, My favorite is Instagram. So you could either do it on Instagram, Facebook, and then Spotify, Apple Music, and I have an email list where I send out emails twice a month talking about the songs, sometimes sending things before they come out, behind-the-scenes stuff, things like that. That's wild. I don't think I realized how much work it was until, like, month three. We're like, oh, wow, okay, I've got, like, 30
songs. The emotion is lazy this month. There's nothing coming out.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, lazy can't be an emotion.
What the hell happened in November? Well,
next month, disappointment. Sorry. Much like the last one.
But yeah, and we just released the EP, so you can check that out. There'll be new songs in January, February, and essentially there's a new EP every 3 or 4 months. Nice. That is focused on a different place in New York. So the first EP is Raw Emotions, : Soho, New York.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man. It's exciting.
One more question for you. Being in the scene of music in New York City, you must have gone and seen some tons of performances. Is there any one that comes to mind where it was like the wildest, craziest thing you ever seen in your
life? Nutcracker. The Nutcracker.
Prince. I don't know how many years ago it was. It was like a few years ago, probably five maybe. I spent every dollar I had and I saw Prince 7 times.
Whoa.
In the course. He like did 12 shows in, I don't know if you guys remember this, like November and December. And every show was completely different.
Where at, MSG or?
They were mainly at MSG, and then he did like one at Giant Stadium that I saw.
Wow, that's awesome.
No, not Giant Stadium. Whatever the indoor, the Meadowlands, I think it was called. I forget what it's called now. I've never seen anything like it.
He's awesome.
He was the greatest performer alive. Like, you can't go to school to learn how to be a rock star, but you can go see Prince 7 times.
I was just watching that clip of him and Tom Petty playing together from, I don't know what it was, like a Hall of Fame induction or something. Like, they were playing, they're playing a Beatles tune, but like,
While My Guitar Gently.
Yes, that's it. Yes. That clip
solo
is ridiculous.
Is unreal.
It's ridiculous. But,
yeah.
That's awesome, man. We wish you best of luck with everything you got coming up, and we hope to hear from you soon. And good luck, man.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you guys.
Stolar.
Stolar. Who dares bother the slumber of Stolar?
He will kill you with emotional music. All right, Mike. Mr. Stolar. I don't know if that's appropriate. Mr. Stolar. But
when he has went in proper concerts or whatever. No, stop calling me Stolar. Mr. Stolar.
It's funny, like today I was thinking, sometimes I overthink, like before the podcast, like, oh man, I don't have anything to talk about. I'm like, well, you remember, like, you can have a conversation, but sometimes I'm like, oh, I gotta like have something, and I didn't have anything, but we talked about the, and I was like, oh, we'll talk about topical stuff. But I was so desperate at one point, like thinking about this, I went on conversationstarters.com. I was like, let's see if there's a random question generator.
Okay.
But instead of it's pretty corny, right? So it's just like all these things. I wanted to give you random rapid fire questions real quick.
Okay.
All right, you're going to answer these in 10 seconds or less for each one. Let's do like 10.
All right.
Random question number one. What's the best thing about your gender?
You know, we rule the world. What can I say? We're men. Sorry, women.
If you could have one superpower, what would it be?
Definitely flying. That seems like the thing to do. Travel the world and just show up in wherever because I'm Superman.
What's your least favorite part of your day?
Dealing with the unemployment stuff. Definitely that thing right now.
If you knew that you only had a year left to live, what would you do?
Travel. Just going back to the last answer. Look around, find new stuff, and make my girl happy.
What is the longest amount of time you've ever slept for?
Probably about 14 hours, I would say. When I was younger, I would stay up all night and then literally sleep until mid-afternoon.
That's the same one. If you knew you only had 24 hours left to live, what would you do?
Just spend it with my girl, make sweet, passionate love, and then do something stupid.
How did you get your name? Do you know the meaning of your name?
I know Burlew was from the Horse Thieves of Europe. Michael was just a popular name of the 70s at the time.
Yeah, the Horse Thieves of Europe thing, you guys got to go back. Well, we'll have to do that another time and bring that back up again. What's better, having high expectations or having low expectations?
Low expectations. So many things go wrong in this world. It's better to shoot low and be pleasantly surprised.
If you could only eat one thing for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Pizza, beyond a doubt. Any form of pizza except for pineapple.
We'll get to that. Mm-hmm. What celebrity do you like to follow?
Celebrities? I don't really follow. I follow some wrestlers on like Instagram. It's usually the women who are half naked in their photos. So.
What is your favorite childhood memory?
Pass.
Wow.
I would say going to like Six Flags with my dad. I loved going to amusement parks as a kid. Still do nowadays.
Very good. Very good. That's the random question. If you want to participate, go to conversationstarters.com and you can send us a question.
If you thought that was amazing, we should get him as a sponsor.
This show is brought to you by randomconversationstarters.com.
Has such questions like, what is your favorite leaf vegetable?
So, yeah, I might, it'd be an interesting, like round table discussion. Like, if you just, like, nobody had any idea what they're talking about, and you just, like, hit that once, and that was what the podcast was. It could be, like, really lame or, like, actually
go to a really bad party and just randomly bring it out. No. So, what was your favorite childhood memory?
Yeah, I know. I picture, like, the Biggest Loser, like, okay, what am I going to say to this person? Like, how do I fit in, like, random question generator? Like, you know, like, hitting it, like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. So, let's just say you have 24 hours to live. Just throwing it out there. Don't look at me funny.
Like a guy on like a speed dating. Like,
yeah.
But so you're back from Chicago.
Yep. Yep.
How was your trip?
Trip was fine. The result wasn't what I wanted it to be, but the trip itself was pretty good. Got a couple of Chicago style pizzas out there. Sadly, Goose Island was closed. The days I was there, I had to go to another random brewery at night, but it was kind of fun going down the rails to Chicago, figuring that out, and kind of a little mini vacation to myself.
So how'd you feel? You were eating. You posted a picture of your deep dish pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Do you enjoy the deep dish better than the thin crust?
This is the way I look at it. Deep dish. I would say I look at that as a full meal.
Like a lasagna almost,
yeah,
right?
Something like that where it's just, all right, I'm going to be stuffed by eating this, but it has all the factions. I like the cheese, the mozzarella, the nice soft crust. This is going to be good. New York style, everything I grew up with, love it to death. I look at it as more of a snack, like on the go, let me grab a slice kind of deal, or look at it as like a big deal when somebody's like, hey, let's get a couple pies. And I'm like, yeah, that's awesome.
Kind of now, I had commented on your Facebook that, like kind of joking, that's not a pizza. Like, you know, saying that's deep dish crap, which I've never had Chicago style. I'm sure it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks different. Like, to me, it looks like a pie.
Yeah.
Like a serving of sauce pie. But and you commented, but it doesn't have a pine, something along the lines of like,
you don't get a vote because you right. like pineapple on your pizza.
Yeah, but
see, here's the way I look at it.
Okay.
If I brought two pizzas to like old school Italians, like go into the heart of Sicily where it's like they have had generations and foundations of pizza and say, I have two things here.
Right.
Inform me, which do you consider more pizza? And I drop down a Chicago-style pizza, and I drop down a regular pizza with pineapple on it.
Right.
They're going to all point to Chicago.
Right. But this is saying that, like, things should not evolve and become different. Think how many foods are combined now. Think about all these fusion restaurants and things that are adding different ingredients and combining things. The pineapple on the pizza is a great invention.
No, I can't do the salty sweet stuff. I have tried in so many variations.
Have you tried jalapenos and pineapple on a pizza?
No, I've done jalapenos on a pizza. They work out great on it.
You should try it. It's got the hot, it's got the sweet, it's got the cheese, it's got the
spicy.
It could
work for me. Like, my favorite at B-Dubs, the sauce, is the mango habanero.
Oh, so I bet you if I gave wings to a bunch of buffalo people and said it had some mango habanero wings or some regular buffalo wings, which one would you say? They'd be like, oh, the buffalo. But the mango habanero are delicious.
Yes, it is. That's totally different.
It's evolved.
No, it's not. That's a sauce.
So?
It's not changing the wing itself.
Sure it is. You're telling me that a mango habanero wing tastes exactly as a buffalo wing? Not even close.
No, those are totally different. And again,
the salt and vinegar wings at Buffalo Wild Wings are very good.
Never had those. I love the salt and vinegar chips.
Yeah, well, you should. But maybe you don't want to because you're so traditional.
I'm not traditional.
well,
it's more of a point. My point was more you were ragging on me saying that's not real pizza. And I'm like, well, you don't get a vote in the pizza because you add those funky things onto your pizza there.
Listen, old school people just like only plain pizza. There's so many good things to put on pizza.
I love the one ingredient that everybody can't stand on pizza, which is anchovies. Mm, I love them. I love the salty flavor on it. Everybody freaks out. Ew, why are you doing it? It's like, it's a salty fish. You've had it hundreds of times with trout and salmon and all that stuff.
I wonder how pineapple anchovy pizza would be. Yeah, that might
that
be,
sounds like a, that might an
be
episode.
That might be a stretch. Mm-hmm. Just the whole seafood and pineapple, two things that really don't go together. But wings, there's
salmon.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but wings is a perfect example. There's thousands of varieties of wings, and we embrace the variety.
Mm-hmm.
But you're just not bending on this pineapple thing.
I'm all for you enjoying what you like. At the end of the day, if I come over, you're like, hey, I'm ordering pizza. You have any preferences? I'm like, yeah, not pineapple.
All right. So when next time I order pizza, it's going to be loaded with pineapple. Maybe I'll try like a half a pineapple and jalapeno and half a pineapple and like ham is a good pineapple. Bacon's a good pizza. Just try it.
I'll try anything, but I'll be honest in it. And every time I've tried, it's kind of like when people say, when I say I don't like baked beans. And everybody in the Fourth of July, oh, you've never had a good baked bean. Wait till you try and make baked beans. And I take a spoonful. I'm like, yeah, thank you. Nope. Still hate baked beans. It's just everybody says, well, wait till you try it in this form. And
you
it's
don't
always
like baked beans? I like baked beans.
I did. Again, baked beans, a lot of times people put the brown sugar and all that stuff. And it's that salty and sweet combination that my taste buds don't connect with that.
All right, well, we're going to have to find a pineapple pizza that you like. Maybe we should try different pineapple and something combinations, and you'll have to tell me. Maybe I'll make a mini pizza for you.
Okay.
With like eight mini slices, because I don't want you to eat eight slices of pizza. Mini slices, but each slice has a pineapple and something,
mm-hmm.
and you have to tell me.
I'll take that experiment.
You have to rank each slice.
Yeah.
From 1 to
it
8.
It could go 0 for 8. It could go 2 for 8. It could go 8 for 8. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but
it'd be called pineapple spice whatever.
Hey, that's trademarked.
Oh, yes.
You know how many millions I got off of that?
Oh, yes. Yes. You are rolling in it.
Oh, yeah.
You are rolling in it from
mm-hmm.
it. But, what do you got over there?
Well, I got a bunch of different weird people and weird stories here. Normally, what we do is we say, guess where's it from Florida.
Right.
But,
guess where it's from Florida. All right, game's over.
Guess which one's from Florida. But in this case, I decided to go to a global platform here by saying, I got five things here. Two of them are from the United States. The rest are from the rest of the world. You have to guess which two are from the United States based off of these stories.
All right, let's go.
All right, story number one. Delivery driver for Amazon caught on camera pooping on man's driveway. A homeowner is down in the dumps after an Amazon delivery contractor left a pile of feces in front of the house. Nemi Batista wasn't home on Tuesday when the driver pooped in front of his house, but he saw the excrement evidence when he came home. Batista then checked his surveillance cameras and noticed the driver squatting on the passenger side of the truck.
Now, do I have to choose now, or do I get to hear the five first?
You'll hear the five.
Okay.
You hear the five.
Pooping and driving.
Yeah.
All right, got it.
Number two, angler.
Seems very American. Seems very American, but
Angler who almost choked to death when Dover sole jumped down throat will probably kiss more fish. A fisherman who almost choked to death when the Dover sole he was trying to kiss literally jumped down his throat has refused to rule out kissing more fish in future. Sam Coilman, 28, was left close to death after the fish he had caught on the local pier wriggled down his windpipe, causing a complete blockage. The angler turned blue as his catch cut off his air supply while his desperate friends attempted CPR to keep him alive. When paramedics arrived on the scene less than 2 minutes later, Quillam was in cardiac arrest.
Jeez.
Operations officer Matt Harrison, who attended the incident, said it was clear that we needed to get the fish out of his patient. Well, that was good analysis there.
Takes years to study for that.
Or this patient was not going to survive the short journey to the hospital. Upon using forceps, paramedics attempted to dislodge the fish. Harrison continued.
They should have used a worm.
Worked the first time.
No, that's not how you catch a fish.
After six tense attempts, he finally able to pull the 14-inch Dover sole from the Quillam's throat.
Okay. All right. So far, my thought... Well, keep going. I'll tell you my thought processes.
Passenger throws coins into plane engine for good luck. A passenger on a flight threw coins into a plane engine in an apparent attempt to bring about good luck. The 80-year-old passenger reportedly made the offering to the aircraft's huge engine whilst boarding on Tuesday. Pictures tweeted from the airline, which appeared to be taken by crew members, showing the coins and engineers assessing the possible damage. Flight 380 was delayed at the airport on Tuesday after an elderly woman threw coins into engine for luck.
Okay.
All right. Seagulls drunk from eating flying ants may pose a danger to humans. Locals have been warned to stay alert due to an unusual high number of seagulls tripping on acid after eating flying ants. Experts say this week's hot weather has caused a mass emergence of the insects, which seagulls like to eat despite it affecting their cognitive behavior. Doctor of the Society of Biology says the ants contain formic acid, which can cause gulls to appear drunk and lose their inhibitions after eating them.
Okay.
And finally, Mad Mike Hughes forced to delay homemade rocket launch. A limousine driver turned self-taught scientist has had to delay plans to launch himself in a homemade rocket. Mike Hughes, who calls himself Mad Mike Hughes and says he doesn't believe in science, has spent years building his own steam-powered rocket in his garage to prove the Earth is flat. The 61-year-old saved money.
My favorite people. I've been trying to get a flat earther on the podcast because I just want them to come on and just annihilate them. That's what I really want to do.
The 61-year-old saved money from his $15 an hour driving job and spent his $20,000 or €15 on this project. His launch had been scheduled for Saturday, but local authorities reportedly stopped him from using public land after reading about his plans in the media.
All right.
Those are your five stories. Two of them are born in the USA.
All right. Well, I'm going to go. All right. So here's my thought process.
All right.
Okay. So I wrote down poop, fish. This is going to be weird if like Alex finds this later. Like,
this is a weird grocery list.
So I have poop, fish, coin, seagulls, Mike Hughes. Now, I think I'm going to go by process of elimination here.
All right.
That's how I'm going to do it. I think the fish story is not from the United States. The reason I kind of tried to do process of elimination in my mind, like, okay, there's fishing just about everywhere. So the range of where this can happen, I thought, could be really big.
Okay.
So I'm going to try for fish not in the United States.
Do you want me to give the answers now?
Yeah, I guess we can reveal as we go.
All right. Scott, that story is from the United Kingdom.
All right. One for one. Okay. So that leaves me with four. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The seagull one is the one I'm struggling with because the seagull one sounds from a foreign land.
It sounds exotic. It sounds like that happened. These ants would be in, like, I don't know, some island somewhere, or
like Malta, or
something like that. Which is toying with me, because I think that you might put something in there to throw me off.
Okay.
So I'm going to leave the seagull one out there for a minute.
All right.
So this is my process of elimination here. So I use the same process of elimination for the coins. Airplane travel is everywhere. So I'm going to go with my second choice. Coins in the engine is not from the United States.
That was reported by China Airlines.
Yes, baby. 2 for 2. All right. So I got 3 left, 2 being from the U.S.
I forgot the one part. They were delayed 5 hours because of that 80-year-old woman. It's
better than being dead, I guess, or like the engine.
Well, I understand that, but I'm sure your first thought as you're boarding is, what the fuck?
Okay. So I... My first instinct, pooping in the driveway, sounded so American to me. It sounded like my friends would do it. It sounded like people in college would poop in the driveway, drunk American. So I chose poop as an American story.
That story originated in Sacramento, California.
Yeah, baby! All right. Oh, man.
So we're down to drunk seagulls and Mike Hughes.
Again, thought process being here. I have, you can see it in my paper, I have Mike Hughes, USA, and then Seagulls blank. Again, Mike Hughes sounds like the all-American idiot down the street that would launch himself in a rocket, which leads me to believe that he might be tricking me. But they always say go with your gut. So originally I said USA, Seagulls, not the one. But I'm going to switch my answer last minute and say Seagulls is USA, Mike Hughes, non-USA.
Mike Hughes was based out of Arizona.
I had it right the first time!
60%. You failed. You failed America, Scott.
Oh, man. My original... I should put a picture on the podcast, on the Instagram. My original one was correct.
But I would love to get Mad Mike Hughes onto the podcast and talk about his whole name. I think he has a website.
Look at this. USA, and then I said blank USA.
Mm-hmm.
And the Seagulls was the blank. And I thought it did sound exotic. Where would the Seagull one take place?
United Kingdom again.
That's not exotic.
I'm just getting some weird stories. It's like, all right, I got a lot from international.
No, I mean, I said it sounded exotic, like ants and stuff like that would be like some weird island.
Yeah.
But, oh, I was so close. Mm. So close. But anything else before we go, Mike?
Yeah, we got gifts, Scott.
Oh, can you push that door closed so this idiot can... Oh, you got a package for us. An unopened package. I think I know what this is. Well, I don't know what it is. I know... the sender.
Yeah, it was unopened by me, but without peeking, you can tell Izzy doesn't really look at names when a package comes in. Because there's a big chunk in the back.
It's like having a dog.
Pretty much. Her initial thought was, oh, this is Shakeology. I'm like, how does that feel like shakes in there? So our buddy David Murray, as you recall from Tecmo Madison.
Yes. Tecmo Tournament.
Yep.
Biggest one.
Yep. Great interview. We've been in touch since the interview. He asked for some help on how we go about getting our guests and so forth. So we gave him a few tips on like some of the emails we go through, or process on how to try to more
directly.
That
was episode 169, if anybody wants to go back. With Lucky Chops, too. So that was a great episode.
Yeah. Definitely check it out. But he was asking for like different tips and whatever, because they're trying to get like interviews from former big names on Tecmo Bowl for their vlog. So as a reward for it, they shipped us out something, as they quoted, only a true Sonics fan would love. Now, I must point out that on the slip here, they spelled shenanigans right. They spelled Burlew, B-U-R-F-E-W. So I'm
Michael Burfu.
I'm Michael Shenanigans Burfu. according to my mail carrier.
There's
so.
No way I'm ever calling you anything else.
Michael Barfrew on the podcast.
And this is from TecmoBowlShirts.com.
All right. Again.
Yeah. So,
all right. This is my second Sonics gift this year from somebody.
Oh.
The other one was the Sean Kemp starting lineup figure.
Yeah,
that
I remember
so,
that.
So, I'm acquiring things. And again, if you guys are just tuning in, even look, go look at our logo closely, and you'll see that it represent it is very similar to the old like 90s Seattle Supersonics logo, which was my team back then. Reading some rumors that they're trying to get them back.
They're trying to get a lot of stuff. They got a. Apparently, there's a rugby league starting next year in America.
I don't care about any of that. I just want my Sonics back. Yeah. Even though they were like...
You don't care about the NHL team?
Nah. I think it's cool,
yeah.
But I just want the Sonics back.
I hear you. Yeah. I hear you.
All right, here we go. Right, open it up. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I think I see Sean Kemp's face. What is... This is the greatest day of my life. This is my favorite game of all time, NBA Jam, with the selection screen of Sean Kemp.
And Gary Payton.
And Gary Payton, the icon that you would choose if you with their power numbers and speed numbers. This is just
awesome.
Fantastic. This is something.
Definitely shout out to them.
What's great is that there's a tie into like what I love. That's like my two favorite things from back in the day: Sonics and NBA Jam. That is ridiculously fantastic. So, Mr. Murray, thank you very much.
Scott, I appreciate it so much. The next time we put you on Instagram, we'll use your actual photo.
But yeah, I'll have to take a picture with it and put it on Instagram.
Yeah.
That is tremendous.
That is awesome.
NBA Jam. A quick story. I think I've told this before, but NBA Jam, I almost bought an NBA Jam arcade game. I was looking for them on like eBay and stuff, and like I came really close to getting one for like $500-$600.
Oh, wow. Like the stand up.
The stand up. Like I wanted it in my old house where the bar was. I wanted it down there, and I backed out. Stupid. I should have spent that then on any Christmas presents for my ex. But, and also I used to go. There used to be a bar when we first turned 21. Me and my friends and. We used to go to this bar, and we loved it. It was the biggest dive bar ever, but it had free NBA Jam all night long. Like, you could just play game after game after game, and then I played NBA Jam a whole lot when I was a kid, too, at this, like, little – we had a place called Maglione's. It was an Italian ice place, but for some reason it had, like, 20 arcade games. So NBA Jam was – the one, but
definitely.
I don't know any other better way to get out of here. So, Berlo, anything to promote?
We'll just promote them again. Go to TecmoMadison.com, the largest, longest running premier Tecmo Bowl Super Bowl tournament in the world. Next one is April 2018 in Madison, Wisconsin. For what I'm seeing in their videos, they've been playing around with a two-player. It's like two players on both sides, four player, I guess you call it, mode on Tecmo. So
right.
Check them out also on Facebook. Look for Tecmo Madison on Facebook. And again, TecmoMadison.com.
Episode 169 again. 169 on our show. You get a lot of information on the tournament. So I want to thank Stolar again for coming on. I will quickly promote this December 28th in Tap House 15 in Jefferson, New Jersey. We have Don Jameson headlining the Free Verbal Shenanigans show. I'm hosting. Come on out, say hi, and celebrate the holidays a little bit. And with that, guys, that's it for this week. I said thank you to Stolar already, but go back and check out our last month. The next week is our Christmas episode, Berlo.
Woo!
Christmas.
See?
So it's one of my favorite episodes to look forward to, so we have some special guests on that. But go back last week. We had Ajay Naidu from
Office Space.
Mo Vaughn the week before. Scott Dickers from The Onion. Arlette and C. Duncan the week before. Trent Dilfer the week before that. And then Aisha Ash and Jonathan
Lee Iverson.
Lee, the last ringmaster for Barnum & Bailey. So a lot of interesting things. Go back and check out our catalog. Share, comment, review. Send us a tweet or follow us on Instagram.
Send us Sonics t-shirts.
All Sonics t-shirts are welcome here. Guys, with that, life is funny. Laugh at it and keep the damn wind at your back. Bye.
Later.
I've been home in my head all day. Wound me up, I might be going insane. Watching all my friends on the TV again, singing all the songs that I wrote for them. I've been known to get in my own way. Head up to the rooftop, smoke a little too much. No, I'm gonna lose my voice again. And I wanna unlock, laugh until we can't stop. Look into your eyes just to forget. I just wanna feel good, feel good. 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 I just wanna feel good.